And that was just it. So the first speaker for this conference is Liz Flix. And she runs ubermorgan.com, and she's really interested on software art, photography, and net art. And if you heard about Vote Auction, she, it was her. And this talk will be about the anti-terrorist laws implication on free thinking and art. Thank you very much, Liz.
Well, hello. Sorry that took a little bit. I'm using the wrong software, apparently. It's not Microsoft, so I'm really sorry. So do you think that's funny? That's the title of this talk, because this was a question we got asked quite a few years ago by a reporter wanting to discuss a project that we did. And I thought it was the stupidest question I've ever been asked, and I've loved it ever since. Because obviously this shit is not funny at all. So, yeah. Because it's about art practice under anti-terror laws. I'm not gonna give this theoretical talk now, so you're fine. It's about practice, so I'm gonna show you a set of projects and focus on kind of the implications of anti-terror laws on the project, on the production of the project, most and foremost. And also, some of the projects obviously have been produced before all these crazy-ass laws have come into effect. So let's just get started. And of course, in the end, I'll be doing a Q&A. Yeah. So a short introduction. So for us, I mean, I'm always talking us, means ubermorgan.com. So that's me and my partner Hans. And so we started in the 90s. And in the 90s, it was really great, because I really loved it, because there was nothing happening on the net, really, except for the crazy, boring shit, and we all thought it was so cool. It was just really nerdy, but nothing else. And obviously, I started working in net art in 1995, about. And that was a really great time, because nobody cared what you did on the net. Not because there was no audience, there was a huge audience, but there was no question about, you know, because the net was still not a dot-com realm, so it was fine. You could just do whatever you wanted to. As a, there's a little footnote there, because we did get, you know, a few problems, but it was nothing major. Also because there was no laws in place that really had an effect onto, like, a European citizen being kind of hassled by the CIA. Basically, local police didn't really want to help out the CIA at the time, so we were fine at the time. So in the early 2000s, .com had totally run over the net, which is fine, obviously, but not only. And we had to really get used to lots of, well, like small people bugging us for doing what we did. But it was just small stuff, you know, as you can see. And especially like the lawyer's letters, these are always very creative and always are a good basis for a new project, I think. But also at the time, all these people coming at you for doing projects, and it's not necessary that you call them art project, it could be anything really, that is not commercial, where you just go like, why shouldn't I do it, right? Because it's, but all these things that got thrown at you were always like really valuable pieces of information on how the system works. And you could work with that, and you could work your way around it. You sometimes may, you know, pay a small legal fine or whatever, but you'd be fine. Obviously, that was not true for our Vote Auction project, which cost us enormous amounts of money, but it was worth it. So in about 2006 to 2008, I kind of noticed, started doing a project back then that was called Super Enhanced. And I very much noticed that I was paying more and more attention to laws that were in place. Not that I was thinking that if I do this project now, I will get, you know, into trouble A, B, C, and D, but it was in the back of my head, which is not really helping when you're trying to, you know, freely create the new project or a thinking space, you know? As it is now, I feel that all these anti-terror laws totally make us come into this kind of cluster where we start self-censoring ourselves. I mean, most of all and foremost, you see that when you're on Facebook, right? And no, don't tell me you're not on Facebook. Obviously, it's a bullshit platform, but still, it's really interesting. Same is true for Twitter. I mean, how many times will you see fuck on either of them? You're not going to post that one picture of, I don't know, that naked butt or, you know, the bare-breasted lady or whatever, because you're like, okay, I've been using this account for a really long time. I don't want to get turned off now because I'm using imagery now that might be, you know, not legal in the Facebook kind of sense. But the self-censorship is going on in your head, and it happens online, but as long as it happens online, it'd be kind of fine, you know, it's on Facebook. But this creeps into offline life as well. I'm very sure, and I've noticed that with lots of people, that the conversations you will have in real life will mirror the ones you will have online, because you get used to this kind of speak, this Facebook speak, you know, or Twitter speak, and it just censors out lots of stuff. And our strategies in working are mostly like affirmative. We're not the ones that use like critical approaches, because that's most of the time very boring, but we rather use affirmative techniques. Figured we need to come up with a new strategy, and we started to do secret projects, because I was just getting really sick of having this thought in my head all the time of self-censorship and whatever. So we just started developing projects anonymously, but we can't publish them under our own name, which is kind of a bug, but that's the way it is. That's enough for a little theory in the beginning, and I want to show you a little video of a project that we did a few years ago. And we did this project because this is like one more thing I think is really important. This is Newspeak. We all hear it all the time. Like yesterday I read something on the news. It talked about a dark figure of badgers in the forest. I figured, how can there be a dark figure of badgers in the forest? Are these illegal badgers? Are these criminal badgers now? And what I heard also a few years ago was with like, what was it? It was Russian, you know, deep sea spider crabs that were moving into Finnish, you know, sea space. And I figured, you know, what? They don't have any identity on them, or what's the problem? You know, this Newspeak, I mean, obviously that's a lot true for, you know, all the enemy combatant bullshit and so on. But this Newspeak, it's real interesting if you listen to it, and it's a real problem if you just go along with it, because it alters your speech, it alters your mind. So we did this project on oil, and it's all about this. I hope this is not too loud. Where is my presentation? Moved over here. So, This video was based on a marketing campaign by Diesel. It was called Be Stupid. I don't want to add to that, but I'm sure some of you people in here have bought a Diesel product. So be proud of yourself. You are officially stupid. Yeah. I was asked to also present, you know, some projects that some of you might like really know, but some of them might not, to give you more of a context of our work. So I'm going to present Vote Auction. Vote Auction was a project we did in 2000, and we usually produce seals for our projects, not logos, because we're surely not .com. If we're anything, we're an authority, so we need a seal, right, that gives you authority. And So it was in 2000. It was a platform for buying and selling, votes for the presidential election in 2000. Gore against Bush, you know, the one that Bush didn't win but took home anyways. You're laughing. It's sad, isn't it? But then maybe, I mean, so much good came out of it, so we should be happy. It'd be a lot colder, probably, if Gore had won, right? He's all into the climate shit and so on. So that was the website. We originally got it from this American called James Baumgartner, who was an art student in the States, and he started doing this as a thesis project, but he got, you know, contacted by the FBI and such pretty early on, and he didn't want to pursue the idea anymore. And Artmark, who is now Yes Man by now and sucks real bad now but was really good then, brought him over to us, and we took over and made it a bit bigger, I guess. And yeah, well, basically you could just, you know, sign up as a voter and just put your vote on sale, and as one who'd be interested in buying a vote, you'd only be able to buy the votes from a, you know, from a whole state, to make it more easy. And the prices of votes in different states varied a lot, obviously. We had an enormous amount of subscribers. I don't know precisely, because we had a randomizing engine in the back, obviously. And we got into serious trouble, obviously, with this project, with any kind of governmental agency, any OGA in the states. And always made special little websites for them, you know, with, you know, just IP filtering, and they got their own websites. And I remember also the Germans were in there as well. I mean, remember Karlsruhe always contacted us on, I mean, our the server on a Wednesday at about 11, and always searched through the same pages. And it was real easy then. You could just give them something they really liked as a website, and then just some DOS software that would download in the background, and you know, stuff like that. That really worked fine. I'm gonna show you a little video again, because we got like this feature on CNN for the project. This is really bad quality because it's from TV. I'm so sorry.
In just 2 weeks, the citizens of the United States will elect their next commander in chief, but could that decision be rerouted over the internet? A website engineered halfway around the world is offering to literally buy your vote. Today on Burden of Proof, bidding for ballots, democracy on the block.
This is Burden of Proof.
Just need to interrupt here a few times. So this was on primetime US CNN. This was right in the midst of the elections, and we were really lucky that we got so much news coverage. This was not because we are so awesome in doing projects. This was because we just touched a topic that lots of journalists really wanted to talk about, but they didn't have a specific issue. But if you present them with a specific issue, they have something to talk about. So they did. We got about, like, I don't know how many people we reached, about like 200 to 400 million people. This was like really all over the place from, I don't know, you know, they even discussed it in, you know, in Russia, in their parliament, and so on. And we got our, you know, servers hacked. And Janet Reno, who was then, you know, somebody, was on our, and we got sued by so many people for either, you know, false promise, consumerism laws, or, you know, election fraud. I need to point out that obviously it's perfectly legal to sell American votes in Europe. But this is also why vote auction is why a big case for lawyers all over the place. This was one of the first cases where people really noticed, oh, internet and national law just really bad together, just don't mix, you know? And, you know, they served as court papers onto our, like, Nokia communicators, you know, like faxes with like 30 pages, which obviously doesn't fit on a communicator, and or on the phone, you know, I need to serve this to you, which is, and it was ridiculous. And, but still, I mean, they couldn't shut us down because we just had, we were aware that if we kept on doing this project, we would get, you know, authority would be getting more and more interested in us. So we had just this, you know, we bought new domains because it turned up the one domain, so we put in the new domain, which gives you a new news story. So that was fine. In the end, we were running on an IP address, but it was all out there, so it was fine because we had the CNN coverage, so that was no problem. So we had no terror laws at the time. So we were no terrorists. We're just doing voter fraud, right? So this is, I mean, we're obviously not doing it because we're just providing a platform. I'm not responsible for any user. That's what .coms is, you know, and you gotta bring democracy and capitalism closer together. That's what we were saying. Yeah, wait, there, I just see, where is he, that's him. That was one of our first providers.
Which along with VoteAuction.com was named as a defendant in a lawsuit in Chicago. In Los Angeles, we're joined by internet law professor Stuart Beagle.
And in Sacramento, California, we're joined by William Woods, chief counsel to the California Secretary of State, where I'm from. And here in Washington, Melissa Stratton, constitutional law expert.
That's my favorite picture. I mean, look at that. I mean, for me, that project is also a very complicated way to produce, like, a video art. You do this whole project, and then it gets filmed by CNN, right? Yeah. If you want to see more of the video, pretty much all of the videos are available on Vimeo. If you go, you know, look for the Ubermorgen channel, so, because that'll go on for way too long because it's 45 minutes and we don't have that much time. So, more screenshots of the guys. Yeah, that's the lawsuit. it's a paper. I started doing paper sculptures at the time. Because what are you supposed to do with it, right? And it's very expensive, you know. This is from a show we just did at Carol Fletcher Gallery in, you know, London, you know, Oxford Circus, high scale. Good shit. But obviously it's not so much fun at the time sometimes, but because I come from a lawyer's family, I cannot be bothered really. So. Now on to something completely different. This is e-commerce trilogy. E-commerce obviously means e-commerce, and I don't like vowels apparently. And these are three projects. It's called Google Will Eat Itself, Amazon Noir, and The Sound of eBay. Google Will Eat Itself, maybe some of you know. That's the seal again. Google Will Eat Itself is just a very easy scheme for, I don't know, a problematic network, maybe. It's all about, we just participated in the Google Ads program and made money with that. And with the money we made, we bought Google shares. Hence, Google Will Eat Itself, right? And we didn't do it on a huge, big scale because we were not so interested in that anymore after doing stuff like VoteAuction. So we just did this more as a conceptual piece. I think at the scale that we did it in, it would have taken us like something like 300 million years to buy the whole of Google. But then it gets, maybe it'll get like real cheap in the meantime, so who knows, yeah. For this project, also still no terror laws, then it wouldn't really be covered by that anyways. But of course, nasty letters from Google, and we got, you know, blocked in, on Google, which is great, you know. I once got disqualified from a conference. That was awesome. And then, you know, that one, I really like that. But if you get a lawyer from Google, a lawyer's letter from Google, that's fine, because we all know you can't talk to Google, right? There's no phone number. You know, you can have, like, you can know someone who works at Google, but officially you can't talk to them. So there's nothing they can do to you, really, because they can only send the letters, but not react again, because they don't want to be bothered. So that's fine. So you can just make a news story out of it. But we closed the project. We made about, I think, like 400,000 euros, and it's still sitting there. It's in a kind of a fun thing, and it's Google to the people. But it's not doing anything, because money shouldn't be doing anything. The next one was Amazon Noir, which was basically just using the look inside the book function of Amazon to download the whole books. You know, just search for lots of terms and then recombine the book. They look quite measly afterwards, but it's all about the content, who cares? And that project got kind of interpreted as if we were focusing on, you know, free books and all that and information for all. And we're not activists. I'm maybe an actionist, but I'm not an activist. So I don't have a political agenda. I don't say that this is good or this is bad. I just might find some things interesting. And so we sold the software to Amazon because they didn't like it, obviously. So we sold the software to Amazon in the end and made some money with that. And the last one of that trilogy is called The Sound of eBay. And I just really wanted to do a project with teletext imagery, because teletext is just so great. And my mom still uses it. But then my mom used to be a programmer, so that's, I guess that explains it. So basically, this is a lyrical project. It makes the music with your user data. And I'm not going to play the music, but I'm going to show the images because I love them so much. I mean, it's just the best parts of teletext, obviously. There's one person who won't talk to me anymore after I've done that, because she thinks it's porn. It's really pixels. I mean, come on. If you see porn in this shit, you're sick. I mean, seriously. Yeah. I'm gonna jump through that because they don't have enough time, I think. Oh, maybe we do. No, we got. There's another set of projects we did. This is actually the ones I like doing most, because this is where I get to do some coding. I love coding in Perl, and I will never code in anything else, I think. And we don't need that Ruby shit. And basically, this is also, yeah, this is the from IPNIC. We learned with Vote Auction, we learned how important the seal is, right? Because we got all these legal letters, but lots of seals, right? Taxes, internet attorney, and shit like that. And so we got our own seal with the Internet Partnership for No Internet Content. Also, sometimes we will get asked by, you know, different entities, you know, companies and whatever, like, you know, you do fake banners and shit like that, and they want you to take it offline. And usually when you talk to big companies and you want them to do something, they tell you, I'm not sure, you know, I'm not the one right person to talk to. They just send you to someone else and never get solved. So we just mirrored that. And so whenever someone asks us to take some information off our servers, I say, you know, you need to speak to a different department. And because that's real complicated, I made this form. and it's the universal content and or domain removal form. It's very complicated. This was not what it was in the beginning. And it was, you know, it's like when you transfer a domain, it's hard, right? You need to sign all that and fax it, and not with all of them, but some of them. And so you just need to put lots of bureaucratic barriers in there, right? You still got the thing going. You really want to get the shit solved, right? You do. But there's just so much paperwork that you got to fill out. And not you, but the other people who want to get the stuff offline. And all the departments, that's, the shit never gets solved. And so then I coded it. And basically, it just works like that. You can just put in any domain, and it just creates a legal document, and that you it's fine, you know, we have so many, the wording's just fine, and like a preliminary, you know, injunction or whatever, and then you just send it out. We didn't automize it because we didn't want to be the ones to blame in the end again. We figured the user can send it out by themselves, you know, we're not going to be the clowns, yeah, and take on your own responsibility, right? And you just send it out. And if you have a legal document where it says, you know, this domain, I don't know, imsocool.com is supposed to be taken offline because they're engaging in child pornography, I guess lots of providers will take it offline in the beginning, not to do anything wrong. So this worked really well. And again, I think it's important to use stuff that comes back to you in form of legal papers in this context to make something else out of it. And also, it just cuts out the middleman again. You don't need a lawyer, you don't need a court, you just need your own court papers, and that's fine. The next one I did was the bank statement generator. It's a weird account statement, and it's a generator that works like that. You just enter a starting figure, and you pretty much, and you enter some other shit, and your name, and blah, and so on. And then you enter how you want to feel when you get the statement. you know, pretty much everyone has the same deductions, right? You go to H&M, and you do some Amazon, and so on. And yeah, I don't think you can ever really get high numbers. But, you know, you just from suicidal to total mania, that's what you can kind of decide for yourself, how you want to feel. I got that because we were really broke at the time, and I remember I was sitting at home, I got opened letters, and I opened a letter from the bank, and it said, like, oh, you're in debt, and I felt really bad. And then I figured, why am I feeling bad? Because of ink on paper. This is really crazy, and it's... So this is always what I say. This is just pixels on screen, and the other one's just ink on paper, especially because we're not talking about personal, you know, letters. We're talking about letters that get sent out by servers that are signed by people. You can't talk to a person about them. So they're not a letter. That's not what constitutes a letter. This is fucking newspeak. So if you react to anything that gets sent to you by a server with an emotional reaction, something's wrong with you, you know? So this is, I put this in here because my daughter Billy really loves it. It's Clickistan. Clickistan, I put it also put it in there because we developed this project for the Whitney Museum of American Art. And it was a bit of a hassle. It's Clickistan, so it's like a JavaScript click game, and I just used lots of stuff that I already had, and you know, JavaScript did it around, so it's all weird and stuff. But we couldn't release it right away because they were concerned about the wording, and they were concerned about the words. I couldn't use the words Muslim, fundamentalist, and terror, and I had not put them in any special, you know, context, these words. There was this one screen where it said, are you allergic, vegan, Muslim, or, I don't know, whatever. It's not a political project, but there was no way they would release the project with these words in it. So I figured, okay, I'm really bad with getting censored, so that's not cool. So I proposed to them, if it were okay with them, if we just took these words out and instead put in the word, you know, variations of the word censor. And they were like, oh, that's fine. I thought, no, not really, but I'll go ahead. So that's yeah, it was fucking crazy. I'll show you the video. It's an online game, but you're not gonna play it now, but you can watch the video. Yeah. Well, this is like a small project we did, I don't know, it feels like at least 10 years ago. And this is what we call a web painting. Basically, I mean, you can read a bit for yourself. We just took the text and pretty much everything else from a website called IrisScan, obviously, and just exchanged the words and to make the content and the message a bit more clear, I guess. We have not used this in a performative way yet, but if we could ever find a partner to do that, I would gladly set it up on, you know, a conference. You know, an airport, and just see, you know, if people are gonna participate. You know, it's just a small moment. You can go to your own private room if you want to. And yeah. By the way, that's what you call affirmative approach, right? And versus critical. And Alain Rouf, the Alano Ranch. This is a really small project we did a few years ago. It's just a regular fake site, right? And it's this fake farm in Tyrol that produces organic meat from these hounds. So all very well, and we just produce it for this small, you know, cultural association. A club in Tyrol, and she said, "Can you do something that will, you know, give us a title page on our, you know, Tyrolean newspaper?" I'm like, "Yeah." And I mean, it's easy, it's fun, but it's really just a fun project, right? We got into so much trouble because of this project. We had five different times, and you were there, right? We had police standing in front of our doors at home, right? It's like Sunday evening. It's Sunday evening. I'm by myself because my partner just went to Sofia for whatever he always does there. And it's, you know, knock on the door, and it's these two police guys. They're like, "Oh, blah, blah, blah." I'm like, look at them, go like, "You're not here for Alanov, are you?" And they're like, "Yeah." And I'm like, "What the hell? You know, it's been like 4 years since we did the project, and they're still coming." I don't know, it's because of the dogs, you know? Don't do anything. It's not a cat, you know? We know, don't. I understand that, you know? Don't say anything mean about cats on the internet. Yeah. We all bow our heads to the gods, right? But, no, basically, it was also a newspaper that got behind it, and there was some, you know, dog-hating forum that totally loved the site. But I mean, seriously, I mean, they made police people drive to the about address that'd be put on the website and drive there until it was like this local police guy who knew up front that there was no farm there. And we read all the court papers, and so on. It says like, "Oh, I went there and there was no farm and no one around knows it." But the thing was, we had to pay money for that because there was no imprint on the website in the beginning. And this is actually, you know, this was not a problem early on, because basically this means, I mean, this is it's a fake site, you know? If police contact you and you're like, "No, we're artists, it's a fake site," they're like, "Fine." And the first two police people that contacted us, they were also, "Okay, that's fine, yeah. Actually, it's interesting, kind of a book," and so on. But you know, laws change over time, and now, you know, they really made us put an imprint in there. Otherwise, you know, we could have, you know, paid as much as 20,000 euros. And they were like, "If you put the imprint in now, you only pay like 200. And we're like, "We're not paying 20,000, you know, euros for a freaking dog, obviously not. We paid more than 20,000 euros for, you know, doing the whole vote auction bullshit, but not for a dog, you know." So that's all, you know, judicial stuff, you know? And it's a, yeah, Tötung von gesunden Hunden, killing, you know, healthy dogs. We should have put up that we're only killing sick dogs. Mea culpa. Yeah. So, and now on to something a lot more serious. This is a project that's very close to my heart. It's called Super Enhanced. And started doing this in about 2006 to 2008. And actually, this is important for me for various reasons. Also because of the talk that's going on right now, obviously, all the time. We're all being listened to and so on. And I don't understand how anyone could not have known that. I seriously don't, because we all know that anything that's technically possible will be done. We know that from ourselves. Even if it's very often only very little, because we're technically incapable, yeah. But there was something else on the agenda, and that was, you know, the issues of enhanced interrogation, torture taxis, supermax prisons in the States, and I personally don't really understand. I mean, I do understand, but I still don't understand. Why there's this huge uproar now about, you know, all the NSA bullshit, but But there was never any of that big uproar when it really got to people being imprisoned. And this is also, you know, this is where real terror laws started happening, right? And this is, and whoa, no, nothing. I didn't hear anything. And we did this project. And one part of the project is this is just image material from our research. I did like half a year of research on this project. And then I programmed the super enhanced generator together with a friend of mine. It's basically an interrogation software. Because it's always the problem in interrogations, who's to fucking blame if anything goes wrong. So we did a software. So the software is to blame, right? So you can only follow your orders and everything's fine. So basically it just runs you through. And if you don't answer properly, you get into trouble. So that's not fun, I know. I'm so sorry. We used this in a few performances in Palestine, I think. That's right. We went to Israel and went to Palestine. And I really got to say, the performance in Israel didn't work out. Because the people we got as volunteers, they just totally fucking chicken out. I mean, it was really just like, you know, what do you do in the beginning? Like you throw a bit of water into people's faces or whatever as an enhancement, right? And they just chickened out. Versus the people in Ramallah, they were fine because they were all really experienced. No, seriously, there was 100% of all the people that were, you know, there for our talk had experience in being detained. I mean, really detained, not just, you know. And about 50% had been more than once. So this is the system graph of the generator. And more images. Sorry to spoil your party. We're looking for a specific image. Oh, that's, if you want to read a good book, this is really close to my heart now, read this book by Murat Kurnaz. Just read it. It might not be a nice Christmas present, but use it for Easter time. Somebody got nailed on a cross there, so that's fine. We worked together with this guy, Chris Arendt, who was a guard in Guantanamo, and he lived with us for 2 months, you know, so we could do more research and talk and blog, get the hands-on approach. That's what we like. And he's kind of okay now. He was in a really bad state then, but I don't feel bad for him because I feel bad for the victim, not for the perpetrator. I'm sorry, Chris. He knows that. That's a set of photographs we did with our kids. People find it offensive. Billy always laughs about it, right? Stop laughing, Billy. That's her little sister, Lola. So, oh, that's not, we don't need that. That's a grown-up person. And that's a funny thing, too. I mean, these pictures I found on the backup of my iPhone, and I had never seen those pictures before. I had not, I mean, I know my research, I had not seen those pictures before, and when I had to, you know, sift through my backup, I found all these pictures of Guantanamo courtrooms. I found that really strange, but it was very, you know, helpful. So this is, there's more to show, obviously, but there's not so much time. There's just like one thing I want to say before we kind of end this, and it's, if we always talk about these issues now of privacy and so on, please bear in mind that this is a first world problem. The Southern Hemisphere does not suffer from, you know, being spied on all the time. They suffer from not getting any fucking attention. So just bear that in mind. That it's kind of a luxury problem that needs to be discussed, obviously. Second, forget crypto, because crypto is elitist. I'm not saying don't do it at all. Obviously, it's something that everyone has to pursue. But if you try to find a solution for the situation now, it's not going to be crypto, because nobody can fucking use it. Okay. And then to all these engineers of the internet, all the sysadmins with so much power and lots of, you know, intelligence very often, lots of brain, but so little education. So, you know, so little amount of books have you have ever read. So little knowledge and so much responsibility. Please, read a book. Read a motherfucking book. I just... Maybe not the Allgemeinbildung für Dummies that I just saw on the train last week, but something like that, okay? We need to close now. I mean, we were running a bit late with starting it, but how much more time do we have?
8 minutes.
Yeah, so I'd rather stop now and we have time for some Q&A. What do you think about that? I'm not gonna run a vote on it.
Okay, for any question, there is just Q on the microphones in the room.
That was great.
Thank you.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. Okay, hi. You seem to like confrontation, so mine is, what's your point?
You just asked me again, do you think that's funny? That's the same question again. There's no point in a confrontation. I'm not the confrontation. The fucking terror law is the confrontation. I'm just mirroring that shit. If you got a problem with that, then you're not doing anything. And you don't need to do anything. I'm not telling you what to do, what not at all. You know, I'm just doing the stuff that I think makes my life more enjoyable.
Number two.
Hi. I wasn't going to say anything, but the last few words provoked me.
Go for it.
On behalf of people that I know who don't live in the first world, surveillance is a problem. And if you think that it isn't, you're wrong.
Well, I spend lots of time in Africa and Near East, most of all in Africa. And I know surveillance is not an issue in a slum. It's just not, because nobody even knows that you're alive. So you cannot be surveilled. No, they have issues of visibility. And I know intellectually, of course, and so on. Yes, I know where you're coming from. But still, I mean, I don't know how many times you're in Africa, but last time I checked, not really. You know?
Yeah, I don't work in Africa, I work in the Americas, but... I think it's a good point for discussion, but I don't think that it's helpful to make a broad statement like that in this kind of environment where you have this stage. And we certainly would really like to talk to you more about that, because it's not good to say that. It's not like internet surveillance is not necessarily a problem, but surveillance is a problem.
Surveillance
is a problem. Having people outside of your house watching you 24 hours a day is a problem.
No, we don't want it. That's not what I mean. Obviously, surveillance is not a problem. Surveillance is just ugly bullshit that no one needs.
Yeah.
It's just idiotic, you know? It doesn't make sense, and no, obviously. But there is no street surveillance in most of Africa. You know, so it's not, it's a different world there.
Okay,
and I just want you...
Well, not the first world is bigger than Africa as well.
Well, I get your point,
yeah,
but
yeah.
I was making a different point.
Okay.
Yeah.
Back to Juan.
Hello.
Yeah.
You talked about self-censorship.
Yeah.
Is there a connection to pure reflection and between self-censorship and reflection? So what is reflection to you and what is self-censorship?
Well, especially when it comes to Facebook, you know, right, when you type in your message, it already gets recorded. Even if you delete it, right? So that's right the case of you're just self-reflecting, but they get it, then you self-censor yourself, and then it's still getting... So it gets all very fuzzy, I think. And I think the fuzziness is kind of an issue right there. Because if you just censor yourself because you don't want to say that, that's fine. But if you don't want to say it because of some other implications that will happen that are fucking crazy, then you have a real issue. I think.
Thank you.
Okay.
three now.
Hi.
So I see art as being something on the fringe, and I think that's what you're doing. But I'm interested in what you think will happen when this will get internalized. I think you see my point. So that, you know, art is always something like exploratory, something mm-hmm. kind of out there, and eventually it becomes mainstream. I mean, it takes time, but it will become mm-hmm. mainstream. So what do you think will happen when this becomes mainstream?
Well, I only know, I mean, I see lots of our work in the context of Viennese actionism. And, you know, that was in the 60s when it just smeared each other up with, you know, any kind of body fluids and so on. And that's still not really mainstream in a way. So I actually can't go back to any historical parallel, really.
I don't think there's any historical parallel. I think this is always
new.
But
I guess
new.
It just, in a way, it becomes more mainstream because it gets old. You know, it's like an old computer with an old website, for example.
So it never really gets internalized in a certain sense.
It might not, which I really like. Yeah.
Weird stuff. Thanks.
Yeah, welcome. Good question.
There is time for one last question, which is to the guy in the microphone one.
Hi, I have a follow-up.
Hey.
The first thing is concerning the surveillance in the first world. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're in Africa often too, how many people there have mobile phones and will have in the next years, and what will they do with it? That's actually my question, and I think that's why I don't mm-hmm. think this first world, third world thing, I don't think that works at all. Mm-hmm. Because our aim is to make one world, and in this one world we all will have this problem. And the second question is, mm-hmm. how does like animal rights law abuse, mm-hmm. how does that somehow refer to anti-terrorist laws?
Well, okay, the first question. Lots of people have phones in Africa, extremely, an enormous amount, because they use it for payment. They don't use it for internet surfing, because that's not possible. So it's a totally different usage. So surveillance comes in from a totally different aspect. So you can't make these people profiles out of their behavior. It's just a really different world. If you want to make it one world, that's great, but it's not there yet. So it doesn't make sense, I think, to impose our first world scenarios onto theirs, because it's not the situation yet, you know. But at least that's also what I get from, you know, talking to people from Africa. That's one thing. And the second one, how does that correlate with anti-terrorism? Because it doesn't matter to them anymore. Because if they want to take your website offline or whatever you're doing, they want to stop it, they will find some kind of aspect in any kind of law business they'll find, you know, and then they get at you. And also, I mean, obviously, when it comes to animal rights, you're quite quickly in a terrorist scheme, because it's like the anti-organized crime. There was quite a bunch of activists incarcerated in Austria because of animal rights activism. So actually, that's really close together. What you wouldn't think, but it actually is by now.
If you can, we have a 30 seconds question from the signal guy up there.
That's fine.
So we had a lot of questions on IRC on why did you put your daughter on stage?
It's their near.
Why is my daughter on stage? Because she likes being with me. It's very easy. It's a family business situation. I asked her if she wanted to be in the audience or up on stage with me. She's opted for the stage version.